It's Monday, November 28th. Goodbye, zero COVID. Hello, tens of thousands COVID. We start here.
Xi Jinping!
China erupts with infections and protests.
It's really putting a test on Xi Jinping's zero COVID strategy.
The country's seen surges before, but this time it's sweeping the mainland and could once again affect the entire world. Guess who's coming to Donald Trump's dinner?
The former president, essentially one of the leaders, if not the leader of the Republican Party, dining, hosting at his home, this white nationalist leader.
The former president's new acquaintance has sent the GOP scrambling, and prices have gone up. That didn't stop us from paying those prices.
The habit, if you like, of shopping for holiday gifts is a very difficult one to change.
What a record-setting Black Friday means for the rest of the year. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Good morning, good Monday. Hope you and yours had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. And yet, as the reality of the new work week arrives, I should say it's also very possible that what a lot of people had this weekend was COVID.
It's much, much better than it was, but it is not at a level low enough where we should feel we're done with it completely, because we're not.
At this point in the pandemic, about 300 Americans are dying every day. And while the death rate is six times higher for an unvaccinated person, the fact is that vaccinated people are spreading this virus as well. If that weren't enough, RSV and flu cases have absolutely overwhelmed hospitals in recent days, leading Dr. Anthony Fauci to tell CBS yesterday that people might want to consider avoiding congregate settings and using masks to stop the spread.
There's almost an intuitive feeling of, goodness, I really want this over with. Mm-hmm. We have to fight that until we get it so low that it's appropriate to say, I don't want to be bothered with it. But it's not, we're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
No.
Of course, a pandemic is by definition worldwide. And recently, we have seen upheaval in the biggest country on Earth.
We turn now to China, the unprecedented COVID protests that are sparking chaos.
Thousands of people taking to the streets, outraged over the country's harsh zero COVID restrictions.
For more than 2 years, China has pursued a so-called zero COVID strategy. And yet, if you look at a chart of infections in China, that graph right now is going straight up. In the balance could hang millions of lives and perhaps the global economy, including the U.S. economy. So let's take you to China right now. ABC's Carson Yu is based in Hong Kong. Carson, can you just describe what it looks like around the country right now?
So China's facing a new wave of COVID, its biggest wave of the pandemic, mainly because of the Omicron variant. And it's really putting a test on Xi Jinping's zero COVID strategy.
We should end his dictatorship, this woman says. He only cares about himself.
Earlier this month, they tried to announce plans to sort of ease the restrictions. But as these cases come up, a lot of the local governments became fearful again, and all these restrictions kind of snapped back in place.
Well, and just so we're clear, like when you say lockdown, that is much different from what Americans think when they hear lockdown. Like we're not talking about mask requirements and like your local bar has to operate at different hours, right? So like what set off these protests?
So frustration has been growing throughout the year ever since the Shanghai lockdown back in April and May.
Confined once again to their homes, the announcement has taken some by surprise.
There is a fence and you're like in a cage and that's it.
And it really didn't boil over until a deadly apartment fire in the western city of Xinjiang, where 10 people were killed. From the videos that circulated online, you could see the fire trucks weren't able to get to the apartment. So there are rumors and accounts saying that because of COVID lockdowns in the city, people trapped inside weren't allowed out of their apartments.
He only cared about himself, his dictatorship. So this is why many people died of him.
Xi Jinping!
This anger spread throughout China online at a very quick speed, kind of faster than the censors could keep up with it. Before you know it, all across the country, people were facing down their local officials, protesting the restrictions that they've had for almost 3 years.
Well, so that's the thing, though. Like, so if you've got these zero COVID policies, if that's been such a focus of the government, is not allowing a single case, let alone a death, why this surge of COVID deaths? Like, how is this escalating so quickly?
So the majority of the population has been vaccinated by domestic made vaccines, so Chinese branded vaccines, which they touted early in the pandemic as being one of the first vaccines to market. So it's a lot of nationalism wrapped up in this propaganda. So they haven't allowed foreign vaccines, especially the new technology, the mRNA vaccines, into China for any of their citizens to use. They're waiting to develop their own, which has been delayed multiple times, and there isn't one on the market yet. So what they're afraid of is actually a lot of Chinese citizens, especially the elderly, were complacent because zero COVID did work for the better part of 2 years until Omicron, because it's highly transmissible. So 30% of elderly Chinese are not boosted. So if there's any easing in China's zero COVID policy, there will be an inevitable exit wave, which will affect these elderly. And you saw it here in Hong Kong earlier this year, where they had the same amount of elderly citizens who were unboosted, unvaccinated. And for a while, Hong Kong had one of the highest death rates in the world. So China saw this and is fearful that might happen on the mainland as well.
And if China is going through these convulsions, I can't imagine the rest of the global economy doesn't feel that, right? Like, does this ripple outward starting now?
Yeah, Brad, it will have a huge impact on the global economy because, after all, China is still the world's factory. If there's lockdowns in place, it'll take a long time for goods to get from the factories to the ports, even if those two places are operating in bubbles. And what you saw in the Foxconn riots earlier last week, that was just a pay dispute. Imagine the same thing happening if there's an outbreak and there's deaths on campus because of COVID. I think the reaction would be even bigger. And it would pretty much shut down productions at all these factories that make the world's products.
Yeah, we've been talking about prices rising worldwide. That has definitely been part of it. Carson Yu, just off the Chinese mainland in Hong Kong. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, the GOP wants to be a big tent party, so why was its de facto leader dining with a white nationalist? We're back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thursday, of course, was Thanksgiving, but one of the most consequential dinners in political circles took place last Tuesday night, because it turns out that on Tuesday at Mar-a-Lago, former President Trump hosted Ye, the rapper formerly known as Kanye West. That was news in itself, especially because both men have overcome recent Twitter bans, Trump for stoking political violence, Ye for some pretty shocking anti-Semitic comments. But this was not the dinner guest that had the GOP panicking throughout Thanksgiving weekend. Kanye West had brought with him another acquaintance, an acquaintance who is considered a leading figure in the white supremacist movement. Let's go to ABC's Will Staken, who spent years covering Trump and, frankly, Trump's place in white nationalist circles. Will, you can tell me then, who is this guy and why was President Trump having dinner with him?
So we learned late last week that former President Trump, hot off his 2024 announcement, hosted Ye, formerly Kanye West, and Nick Fuentes, who, like you said, is, you know, this known white nationalist. He has an internet show where he constantly is spewing racist, anti-Semitic, sexist remarks.
I don't support women's rights. I don't support LGBT rights. I believe in race and gender essentialism.
The DOJ has named him as a top white supremacist that they've been tracking. And another thing that's notable is that he's been a major Trump supporter for years. This is someone who also helped organize rallies during the Stop the Steal movement. Mm. So I'm told by someone that was at the dinner with this small group of people that the dinner lasted just under 2 hours and that former President Trump was actually taken by Fuentes.
Trump was like, "I like you." He's the point. I was like, "Me?" He said, "This guy's smart. Where did you find this guy?" I was like, Hello, Epic Department. Hello, Awesome Department.
Someone that was there said that he was actually impressed with how much he knew about the former president's movement and like gave him advice basically on his campaign. And so now you have the former president, essentially one of the leaders, if not the leader of the Republican Party, dining, hosting at his home, this white nationalist leader.
Was he like on the invite list, or how did that work?
The way the former president says it is that Ye reached out to hold a meeting, and that he brought along Fuentes with him to join, and that, according to the former president, he was surprised that there was another guest there. The person that I spoke to who was there said that the former president didn't seem to necessarily know who Fuentes, that was Nick Fuentes at the table. I think part of the story that I think isn't getting as much attention is, yes, of course, it's alarming and notable that he met with Nick Fuentes, but this is a former president meeting with Ye at a time when he's in the middle of making these anti-Semitic tirades. He's losing billions of dollars worth of business.
I could say anti-Semitic things and Adidas can't drop me.
And this is who the former president is dining with.
Oh, like who he definitely was reaching out to and wanted to hang out with. When Fuentes left that dinner, people started realizing what was happening, that the former president was meeting with an avowed white nationalist, even though he wouldn't call himself that, but that's what he is. What was the reaction among people who track like white supremacy, who track these areas? Like how big of a deal was this, I guess?
Anti-racist organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and others quickly denounced it. But if you talk to like experts who track this stuff, this is gold to people like Nick Fuentes. This is what they feed off of. I hate to inflate even his place in this kind of the political movement, but you know, their place next to power, their proximity to power, is what they feed off of because they believe it will help them spread their message.
The Jews had better start being nice to people like us.
So while Nick Fuentes may not be this most influential figure, you know, he's been banned off of social networks like Twitter, YouTube, Facebook because of his comments. He gets a few thousand people watching him a night. When he is then, you know, placed next to the leader of the Republican Party, they feel like it validates their movement.
There are connections between these white nationalist groups and some in Trump's orbit.
And, you know, I think experts that track this stuff see that as incredibly problematic given, you know, how it can spread their racist anti-Semitic beliefs quicker.
So no, I don't think it's a good idea for a leader that's setting an example for the country or the party to meet with avowed racist or anti-Semite.
The dinner that Trump had with Fuentes has been condemned by some Republicans, but others, you know, you would think there would be kind of widespread condemnation for the de facto leader of your party meeting with renowned racist, but you're not seeing that. And I think part of that is because this isn't the first time Fuentes has actually met and cozied up to Republican leaders. Tonight,
I don't believe anyone should be canceled.
He held an event earlier this year, and who was their, you know, keynote speaker was Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who now is essentially being set up to play a pretty influential role in the upcoming Congress once they take back the House. So I think this problem, you know, that Republicans have where there's this cozying up to, you know, white nationalists like Nick Fuentes, that puts them in a position where how can they condemn Trump when their own people are meeting with them earlier this year?
What has been the reaction from Mar-a-Lago, and what's been the reaction around the broader GOP, I guess?
Yeah, I think if you talk to people close to Trump and like in his camp, you know, you get the familiar kind of response anytime something like this happens, which is shock and, oh, we're surprised. But, you know, I think this is somewhat a full circle moment for Donald Trump. Nick Fuentes rose to fame or somewhat prominence in 2017 when he attended the Unite the Right rally, the racist Unite the Right rally. Mm-hmm. And that's when Donald Trump said there are fine people on both sides. And that was an uproar back then. And now he's, you know, dining with someone at his house right when he's announcing, you know, he's going to run again for the White House. I think that sets the tone for what to expect. And I think at a certain point, Maybe it shouldn't be surprising that these things are happening. You know, I think we've been kind of seeing this over the past few years. And so I think some Republicans have recognized this and they're grappling with this, but, you know, others are staying quiet. And I think, you know, moving forward, this is going to be what they're going to have to deal with their party heading into the 2024 election and as they take back the House.
All right. That is Will Staken, who's there covering Congress every day. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
If you haven't heard our Black Friday episode, I highly recommend you go back and listen at some point. It's a deep dive on the emerging buy now, pay later industry. And right on cue, as Black Friday rolled around, in an era of rising prices and a sinking feeling in economists' stomachs, Americans, it turned out, spent a ton of money this year. ABC's business correspondent Deirdre Bolton is with us. Deirdre, I thought we were all supposed to be worried about a recession. Like, how much did Americans spend and what did they spend it on?
Well, Brad, you're so right. There are so many people who share that view as these records keep coming in. I'm with you. It's like, what? Wait a second. I thought we were supposed to be anxious. But Black Friday, more than $9 billion. That's what we spent collectively. That's more than 2% year on year. So we bought electronics, home items, audio equipment, toys.
I'm going to Victoria's Secret. I'm going to Bath & Body Works. I just got a new Grain Baby. So I'm going Grain Baby shopping as well.
Cyber Monday forecast, of course, to be another record with more than $11 billion spent. And as we know, Cyber Monday's roots are in tech.
Finally getting a PS5, sacrificing some sleep to get it.
So that means a lot of TVs, laptops, computers, and toys, of course, are likely to be purchased.
Why? Like, is it because prices are higher? Is that why the total dollar number we spent was higher? Is it just because prices have gone up?
So prices going higher is part of the reason, for sure. There are a few points in there that analysts say, yes, higher inflation is just part of the numbers coming in higher. But there is another habit in that most Americans are used to showing affection this time of year by purchasing, which means that even though Americans are paying more for rent and are paying more for groceries, the habit, if you like, of shopping for holiday gifts is a very difficult one to change, or a lot of people don't even want to change it because they want to give friends and family gifts this time of year, and that's just part of the season. So holiday spending habits are just hard to break, meaning most analysts are saying Americans will find other ways at other times to tighten their belts, but typically it's not going to be during the holiday season. I know you did a big special on Buy Now, Pay Later, and it is also worth noting that some of these bills may be coming due in January or February, meaning unfortunately some people may be overextending themselves right now. We do know that credit card usage is moving higher, and that's worth noting, especially as the Fed continues to raise interest rates. The national average for credit cards is now around 19%. There are many store credit cards that the APR is something like 30%. So those are never great to carry balances on. And then you do have more and more people participating in these buy now, pay later programs, which is great if you are keeping track of every single vendor that you're doing these buy now, pay later programs, and also keeping track of what you're putting on your credit card in a rising interest rate environment.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said about the habit. Like, especially, I feel like a lot of people right now, we've got this vibe like, hey, this is part of my therapy, right? Like, I have to spend on food, I've got to spend on shelter, I've got to spend on healthcare. And at this point, a lot of retail consumption is like some form of mental healthcare, I think, for a lot of people. Deirdre Bolton, I know you'll be tracking Cyber Monday. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome.
Okay, one more quick break, then we're going to claw our way to the finish here. One last thing is next. And one last thing. Lobster is often considered a highbrow food, so why would a fancy schmancy place like Whole Foods be banning Maine lobster from its stores?
It's not acceptable to stab Maine people in the back without any evidence.
That's right. Over the holiday, politicians from Maine angrily spoke out against policies that are dividing environmentalists and the New England lobster industry. So, here's what happened. In recent months, several environmental groups have criticized Maine lobstermen, not because of what they do to lobster, but what their lobster traps do to whales. The North Atlantic right whale is one of the most endangered species in the world, and its biggest killer is fishing equipment. Lobster pots sit on the ocean floor, which is fine, but stemming up from them are these big ropes that, according to nonprofit groups like Seafood Watch, can entangle these whales. When Seafood Watch came out against Maine lobster this year, the meal delivery service Blue Apron said it would immediately stop serving it. Then HelloFresh did the same. Whole Foods has now followed suit, and lobstermen suddenly see a threat to their very existence.
These guys are fed up. I'm fed up. We're all fed up. There has been not a single right whale entanglement attributed to Maine lobster gear in 18 years.
The governor of Maine came out and said, "You can't attribute these whale deaths to our citizens." Lobstermen were outraged, saying sustainability is a huge part of their profession.
They can't all breed. We want to keep track of the ones that can. This lets future fishermen know that she's a breeder even if she's caught when she doesn't have eggs. She can no longer be kept. We'll send her on her way.
But the biggest issue here is the growing influence of these environmental groups that give sustainability scores to different foods. Many stores now have missions with explicit pledges to their customers to be responsible, and they rely on these nonprofits for guidance. Groups like Seafood Watch have stood by their assertions despite all the pushback. And now, even in states where Democratic leaders say they're all in on fighting climate change, the consequences to workforces are feeling more real, and those politicians are feeling the pinch. You heard that Maine lobsterman there talking about how they do throw lobsters back. My favorite part of that video is whenever he throws back a lobster, he sends it down with a snack. Like, he sticks a little bait fish between the claws, they clamp, splash, this lobster drifts down to the ocean floor and just munches on that anchovy when it gets there. Hey, if you've got specific stories you find really useful or really informative, hit us up with a rating and review and tell us about them. It really helps us out. I see one user over the weekend specifically wrote to say how much she loved Iru Ekpenobi's reporting on Black Friday. That was someone with the username Aries Mama, so I hope Gemini and Libra mamas all follow suit. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.